This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
Donald Trump grabs the nation's attention after leaked audio reveals his treatment of women.
To me, that was a bigger October surprise than the WikiLeaks.
Hillary Clinton's never-ending email scandal continues in the background as Trump's support falls apart. Political scientist Carol Weisert will also discuss the politics of Hurricane Matthew as Governor Rick Scott refuses to extend the voter registration deadline.
I'm really disappointed in that, actually. I think it's become a real partisan issue, and it's too bad.
All that and more coming up on episode 79 of The Rotunda.
I moved on her, actually. You know, she was down in Palm Beach. I moved on her, and I failed. I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and her. She was married.
That's huge news, Sarah.
No, Nancy. Yeah. No, this was marriages. And I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping. She wanted to get some furniture. I said, I'll show you where they have some nice furniture. I took out furniture. I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there. And she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. She's changed her look.
She's your girl's hot as shit in the purple.
Whoa. Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, the Donald has scored.
Whoa.
You've probably heard and seen the leaked audio and videotape by now. If you haven't, what you're listening to is Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump talking about using his fame to prey on women. He graphically describes sexual assault while then-Access Hollywood reporter Billy Bush, a cousin of Florida Governor Jeb Bush, laughs along after hearing how Trump preyed on his then-co-worker.
Yeah, that's it, with the gold. I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
After the revelation of this audio, there was an avalanche. Top Republicans, one after the other, started retracting their support from Trump, including Congressman Tom Rooney. Some, like Senator Marco Rubio and Governor Rick Scott, have only decided to condemn Trump's actions while maintaining their support. But here is some analysis. We've watched Trump's character on full display. He's offended veterans, Muslims, the disabled, Mexicans, Asians, continuously with offensive statements towards women. He's pandered to white supremacists and the alt-right, flirted and praised foreign dictators. He has said many things on national television and throughout his career that makes what he has said on that 2005 tape the least bit surprising. So why are people now outraged? Trump has been on the record saying worse. He's maintained the support of Republican Party leadership throughout it all. The tape does not reveal anything new other than Billy Bush, the entertainment reporter, playing a leading role in what could have been accessory to sexual assault. Here's what Trump had to say in a video he posted to Facebook.
I've never said I'm a perfect person, nor pretended to be someone that I'm not. I've said and done things I regret. And the words released today on this more than a decade-old video are one of them.
In an astonishing move, Donald Trump ended up pulling his own October surprise right before the second debate by hosting women who accused former President Bill Clinton of sexual assault.
Mr. Trump may have said some bad words, but Bill Clinton raped me and Hillary Clinton threatened me. I don't think there's any comparison.
At 12 years old, Hillary put me through something that you've never put a 12-year-old through.
And you're hearing from Juanita Broderick and Kathy Shelton. Trump ended up inviting those women inside the debate hall to face off and watch the exchange. Here's how he defended his actions during the debate, followed by Clinton's response.
It was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I am a person who has great respect for people, for my family, for the people of this country, and certainly I'm not proud of it, but that was something that happened. If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women. So you can say any way you want to say it, But Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attacked them viciously. Four of them are here tonight. One of the women, who is a wonderful woman, at 12 years old, was raped at 12. Her client, she represented, got him off, and she's seen laughing on two separate occasions, laughing at the girl who was raped. Kathy Shelton, that young woman, is here with us tonight. So don't tell me about words. I am absolutely, I apologize for those words. But it is things that people say.
When I hear something like that, I am reminded of what my friend Michelle Obama advised us all. When they go low, you go high. And look, if this were just about one video, maybe what he's saying tonight would be understandable. But everyone can draw their own conclusions at this point about whether or not the man in the video or the man on the stage respects women. But he never apologizes for anything to anyone. He never apologized to Mr. and Mrs. Khan, the Gold Star family, whose son, Captain Khan, died in the line of duty in Iraq. And Donald insulted and attacked them for weeks over their religion. He never apologized to the distinguished federal judge who was born in Indiana. But Donald said he couldn't be trusted to be a judge because his parents were, quote, Mexican. He never apologized to the reporter that he mimicked and mocked on national television and our children were watching. And he never apologized for the racist lie that President Obama was not born in the United States of America. He owes the president an apology, he owes our country an apology, and he needs to take responsibility for his actions and his words.
That was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it.
For one thing, this is far from locker room banter. This is sexual assault. But as for Trump's performance throughout the entire debate, he did a lot better than expected. He did have a flip-flop where he pointed out Clinton's good quality as that she never gives up. If you recall last debate, Trump accused her of not having enough stamina. Clinton ended up complimenting Trump's kids. And once again, Clinton's email controversy is back again.
You know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Joining the Rotunda this week to discuss the politics of Hurricane Matthew is Florida State University political scientist Carol Weisert. But of course, we couldn't overlook the elephant in the room.
Man, the breaking news with Donald Trump being caught on tape, saying some very vulgar things with regards to women and touching women without their permission and grabbing their genitalia. What were your thoughts on hearing that, and how do you think it will impact this race?
Well, nothing good. I guess the good news for Trump is that he didn't have many women supporting him anyway. So I think if the few women that are remaining might go to the other side at this point, because it was pretty disgusting. And if this indeed reveals his view of women, that's not something I think most women voters would find appealing in their presidential candidate.
Yeah, even from the last debate where we saw what some would say a decisive victory from Hillary Clinton, if you're asking a Trump supporter, that will not be the case. But we've seen in the numbers, at least from legitimate polls, it did help Clinton to an extent.
Yes, I think it definitely did. It was very interesting because coming into that poll, I really thought that it was going to be hard for Hillary to do well because people there was a high expectation that she would do well and kind of a low bar for Trump. But I think that there were several times in there, particularly the beauty contest winner, the Miss Universe, that were pretty breathtaking for a presidential campaign debate. And then also some of the side things that he said about just being smart because I didn't fill in. I didn't apparently pay income taxes. So those were pretty off-putting things that you don't really see happening very often in a debate.
Yeah, women's issues are not on the side of Trump. And we're seeing that even now. And this latest incident is, I'm wondering if he'll be able to survive this with all of the establishment Republicans that are really turning away from him, making announcements today as we speak, that they're not supporting him.
Yes, I mean, it can't do him any good. However, we have 30 days, I think 31 days until the election. And with this election, who knows what can happen in 30 days. So I think at this point, it looks pretty bad. But as I said, it might not hurt him all that much because I'm just not convinced he was doing well with women anyway. So if it doesn't really hurt him with women, who knows? Maybe it'll help him with men. I don't understand that locker room stuff. But it's possible that it's not going to hurt him as much as maybe it appears.
Rick Scott, he issued a statement condemning what Trump said, but he didn't go as far as what we're seeing from other Republicans is removing himself completely from Trump. And we know he's part of the Trump PAC. So he's in a bind, but he's been in this bind before.
He has indeed. So and he somehow gets out. And I heard a religious leader today on an interview, and he was saying he still supported Trump because of the abortion issue, that they feel very strongly that Trump will support the evangelicals on abortion. So I think people have their priorities in terms of, you know, how they're voting.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, your host, inviting you to keep this program alive with your financial support. Visit rotundapodcast.com and find the donate button. It's on the top right. Again, visit rotundapodcast.com, tweet us at rotundapodcast, and be sure to take our listener survey. Also, you can follow us on social media at rotundapodcast. And while you're on our website, take our listener survey. We're very much interested in what you have to say about this program and future programs. Again, thanks for your support. We'll continue my discussion with Florida State University political scientist Carol Weisert. The Clinton campaign is also dealing with a crisis. It's not as big as the Trump scandal, but new leaked emails reveal Hillary Clinton is, how shall we say it, two-faced. Yeah, I think that's what we used to say in high school. The emails appear to show Clinton taking a tone in private that is more favorable to free trade and to banks than she has often taken on the campaign trail. The emails also suggest she was aware of security concerns regarding electronic devices, which could feed into criticism that Clinton was careless with national secrets when she was Secretary of State.
I have to say, I looked at those and I said, really? I mean, it's, she talked about how, at least what I read, one of the things that they had leaked in the email, she had talked about how she had grown up in a middle class, it's a household, but now she'd kind of gone away from that and was living kind of a different lifestyle, and she was remembering what it was like. And I thought, okay, that's not so damning. I mean, I don't understand. So I haven't seen all the leaks, but I think that coming on the heels of the Donald Trump locker room, shall we call it, dialogue, it looks pretty tame.
and the locker room dialogue. I'm like, that doesn't always happen in a locker room, people.
Yeah, well, see, I haven't been in a man's locker room, so maybe
I'm
glad to hear it.
Yeah, their response to it, but then they're like, oh, it happened 10 years ago. I was like, what was I saying 10 years ago? Those words weren't coming out of my mouth.
I really don't have much sense of men on this. I mean, maybe men do sort of get it, although it's disgusting. But I think I could speak for women to say it's really disgusting. And even if it did happen 11 years ago or whatever, it's a window into somebody's views, because you don't change your views in 11 years. And it's not a very positive window.
And one of the things lastly on that is he was speaking in the active voice. Like, this is what I do. It wasn't like an offside comment. I think that's what's driving this even more. It's like, you know, he was describing how he goes about his everyday life.
Yeah, that's true. It was pretty breathtaking.
Yeah.
To me, that was a bigger October surprise than the WikiLeaks.
Again, here's political scientist Carol Weisert.
With Rick Scott, he issued a statement condemning what Trump said, but he didn't go as far as what we're seeing from other top Republicans as removing himself completely from Trump. And we know he's part of the Trump PAC and the leadership there. So he's in a bind, but he's been in this bind before.
He has indeed. So he somehow gets out. And I heard a religious leader today on an interview, and he was saying he still supported Trump because of the abortion issue, that they feel very strongly that Trump will support the evangelicals on abortion. So I think people have their priorities in terms of, you know, how they're voting.
All right. Now, with more on Rick Scott, we went through another scare with a big storm, a big hurricane, Hurricane Matthew, that really just brushed the East Coast. And thankfully, it didn't do a lot of damage on shore. What are your thoughts on Governor Rick Scott's performance during the storm in leading the charge and making sure Floridians were safe?
You know, I thought he did a fine job in that. The governors really often shine in the emergency kind of category, although they can really blow it as well. But I thought he did very well. He was calm and reassuring, but yet he was directing people to evacuate. He went out and actually to a lot of the centers and did a hands-on kind of thing. So I thought his performance was quite good, actually.
I've always heard that this is a time for them to shine, and they usually shine, but you say they can really blow it. Have there been instances where they've blown it?
Yeah, this was years ago, but when there was a nuclear event at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, the governor did not come across as he was. I think he was out of town, and he just didn't come across as the leader of the state. So that was one example where the governor didn't step up. But most of the times, the governor, this is a job the governor enjoys, right? It's reaching directly to the people. It's looking very gubernatorial. You don't have to deal with the legislature. So it's a real opportunity. And I think Rick Scott acquitted himself quite well.
Yes. This is the time where he's in control. He's in charge. There's no one else that can meddle with him. And he can secure all the power.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is where the governor really does the chief official in the state, speaking for the state, getting money for the state from the federal government, reassuring, directing. This is a terrific role for a governor. And as he said, I think he's done a great job.
He has done things as far as the 1.5 million people who were in that evacuation zones, really saying, get out. He was very clear, this will kill you. And he did things like lift the tolls and making sure the passage is clear to clear the way. But one thing that was noted that he is not doing is making adjustments for the voter registration deadlines. He's not extending that.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
I'm really disappointed in that, actually. I think it's become a real partisan issue, and it's too bad. I mean, I think the issue is We want everybody to vote in Florida who can vote. And we want to encourage those people to vote. And I think it would have been, my preference would have had him say, okay, I want everybody to vote, so therefore I'm extending the period of time for those people, particularly who evacuated or who are worrying about their houses or whatever, or students. And I think that would have been sort of icing on the cake for me. I really think that would have been a terrific thing for him to do. I think it's kind of unfortunate because it was the Hillary Clinton campaign, I guess, that asked for the extension. I was talking to some students in PERG, which is a student group, national student group. And they were talking about the issue, and I suggested that they contact the governor. So, you know, I was thinking maybe somebody else asking. But with the Hillary Clinton campaign asking, it automatically becomes a political issue. And that's too bad.
Yeah, yeah. We're seeing that even South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, she went forward with extending her state's deadline. But Scott, Governor Scott, he was the face of this in the beginning, and he led the charge. So it's just not making sense in my head with the amount of people leaving South Florida to not allow this time for them.
I know. I think it's really unfortunate. It was a real opportunity for him, I think. But he is the head of a pack for Donald Trump, and very active and very supportive of Donald Trump. So it really, you know, it looks like maybe that was a factor, as they said, again, since Hillary Clinton's group asked, he's on that other side. But it is too bad, particularly for groups that, like students, tend to wait to the last minute. And you know, there are just a lot of people. I mean, surely most of us have already registered, but there are just some people that don't. And I think my colleague Dan Smith at the University of Florida looked at the 2012 election and found there were about 86,000, I think he said, people who registered the last 8 days of the campaign, and at one point 50,000 over the last 5 days. Well, those are people that might not be voting, and this is going to be a close election in Florida. We need to have everybody voting who can, and I don't care what party they're in. I just want them to vote, and I just think that this will potentially cut off those people.
In that same stats about who waits, that group that waits until the last minute, the last week, it is shown that there are less Republicans who wait until the last minute. The majority are Democrats, and then followed by no party affiliate.
And again, a lot of students, I think, fall into that category too. They have important things to do, and they can't be bothered with this until the end, and then they finally do it. Yeah, I know, and that's a kind of another partisan tack. I mean, I don't know. I haven't talked to the governor. I don't know his thinking here, but it, you know, it looks like maybe there's some partisanship going on here, and that's too bad because I think all of us want everybody to vote in Florida. It's going to be another close race in Florida, and I remember the 2000 election with 537 votes in Florida, so every vote does count, and I would be, I'm just disappointed.
In looking at the politics that may have come through within this whole disaster with Matthew, where were some instances from your observation you've seen like politics may have seeped into the whole recovery?
I think this is the best example, Tramiel. I didn't see any. I know early on Rick Scott was sort of demanding money from the federal government to come to Florida. And that seemed like a little bit strong before the hurricane even hit. So I think there was some political politics going on in there. But I think for most of the time that I saw anyway, that it was not political. Rick Scott was serving as a leader of the people of his state, which is what he should do.
Mm-hmm. All right. As we wrap up here, there is another debate. What are you expecting come November 8th on Election Day or after? What do you predict for Florida?
I think Florida is going to be another very close race. Florida is just by the voter registration, by its history, by its migratory patterns, by its demography changes, everything that's important, I think, in elections we can sort of find in Florida. So I think it's going to be quite close. I think the big issue for me is turnout. I think if the turnout is high, Hillary wins Florida. If the turnout is low, I think that Trump really has a chance to win Florida. So it's all going to depend upon the turnout. And that's really what I'm watching.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Florida State University political scientist Carol Weissert. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and please take a moment to fill out our listener survey. We want to learn more about you to help us shape this program. And be sure to join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.